Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is the founder and CEO of Shift Incorporated, Nicole Casanova. Shift is a board game that helps people become more aware of why they behave the way they do, and the game teaches people that their perceptions are their reality, and that they have the power to shift their thoughts from fear to love. Nicole and I will be discussing about her life's journey, Shift the Game, and the power of self-awareness. Good morning, Nicole. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Good morning from Colorado.
Fantastic. I'm so glad you're able to join me this morning. I'm very excited about learning this wonderful, exciting game that you have created. But first, let us start out by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be a long one. Okay, I'll summarize.
We have a full hour, and we don't want to touch everything.
Well, it's always fun when you ask someone to talk about themselves, right?
So, right, there you go.
The brief background, I was brought up in Miami, Florida, and I was raised in a home where my mother was Jewish, my father was Catholic. I actually joke around because eventually I went on to marry a Buddhist, and I say that my religion is love. So I grew up in Miami, and it was a very, very interesting place to be. This was like in the Miami Vice days and the South Beach Club days, and I was really good at living fast. And at the same time, I was a great student, and I was able to get an advanced degree really young. I actually went to Colorado for my master's and was on this fast track to success. So by the time I was maybe 24, 25, I had done my thesis on targeted marketing on the web, and I went to San Francisco and I sold internet advertising, and I was a founder in three different startups. One of them, I was employee number three, and maybe a year and a half, 2 years later, they had 5,000 employees. I was at Lycos. I was at some of these, back in the day, big companies that were changing the world. San Francisco was so much fun, and there was a ton of money floating around, and I was really fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. So I had a lot of financial success very young, and at the same time was really, really good at still, I guess you could say, destroying myself. I was pushing myself in many, many ways. I was run by a belief that I still struggle with today. I believe that there are three main core beliefs: innately bad, not good enough, and unlovable. And the one I run the most is not good enough. And I that would show up for me as not enough time, not enough money. So, you know, here I was on this hamster wheel going as fast as I could to make as much money as I could. And I was partying just as hard. And at some point, I was introduced to a woman who exposed me to A Course in Miracles. And I started to read about the Course, which basically tells us that our perceptions are our reality. And I started reading Eastern philosophies and just all sorts of universal principles that were all basically saying the same thing, that I wasn't victim of the world, that I was actually creating all this stuff that was happening to me. And I was, for many, many years, completely unwilling to be responsible for any of that. I mean, my whole life was outer-directed. I was told how great I was by, you know, how many A's I was getting or how many dollars I was making, and was really conditioned to have something outside of me create or tell me what my worth was. So when I started learning about those principles, I actually quit my job. I was making I was making a lot of money. I was probably this was before the market collapsed. I had already hit the $1 million mark, at least on paper,
right?
And decided to walk away and do something of more purpose. And I wasn't sure what that was going to be. And eventually, it showed up as a board game, and I created Shift, which is a game that shows us why we do what we do. It was created first as a physical board game, and we I spent a good amount of time thinking about what is this going to be like. At the same time, I was decompressing and traveling and having, you know, fun at 25, 26 years old, and moved back to Colorado and launched the actual company Shift. I think it was 2003, maybe. I'm not sure what the dates were. And had some fantastic people working with me. We started to, we got Shift into probably like 250 stores across the nation, including Whole Foods. Deepak Chopra was selling us. And then we started to look into doing corporate events as well. So we were, the game shows us, or before I even go into any further, do you want to ask me other questions? I can continue to go through my life, or I can... Do you want me to go present, or do you want me to talk a little bit more about the game, since that's kind of where we're at?
Yeah, you're doing wonderful, and I do want to go back to your life in the sense that I know that I've read your bio, and you were very successful. People that don't realize it, I mean, just imagine, at 25 years old, you were already a millionaire. And so that's a big hit, in a sense. And you mentioned something about salsa is in your blood, so growing up in Miami. We talked a little bit about dancing before the show starts. I understand, and I can relate to that from that standpoint of view, because at a very young age, money coming in, and then what I got from that is that a lot of successful people tend to be insecure. And that's how we feel that we're not good enough or don't have enough. And that is the constant drug that pushes us to do even more, in all actuality. And I think exactly what you had mentioned, and your profound change happened when you have the epiphany of deciding to, hey, where do I go from here? And, of course, you dealt with A Course in Miracles. Can you share that a little bit more with us with regards to how that affected you?
Yeah, and I want to really make note that it wasn't so much that this profound change happened to me in an instant. So when I'm interviewed, people will always ask, you know, what was that aha moment, or, you know, what changed everything?
Right.
That is not my experience. I mean, I've read about tons of people that have these awakenings, these moments where they just have immense clarity. And for me, that has been a process. You know, as we were talking about earlier, before this show, learning is a process. And for me, I'm constantly being reminded of my truth, that I'm whole and complete, and I'm constantly having to remind myself to let go and trust the process, to really look at what I value. And at that time, I was exposed to the beginnings of, you are responsible for what's happening.
Right.
And there was a resistance for a long time. I mean, I would say, you know, I just turned 37 on Saturday. I just had my birthday. And
happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I would say, I mean, even for the last 10 years, since I've had this this awareness and this understanding that what I believe internally is what I'm going to experience externally. You know, I've known these things from an intellectual standpoint for a very long time. For me to own it and to live it is a constant process. So I you know, even when that shift happened, I started to get into A Course in Miracles. Believe me, as soon as I put my ego on notice that's it, like it's not going to work anymore, it became stronger and stronger and more crafty. And so it's not like, you know, over the years it didn't get, you know, I mean, my ego decided to make Shift a huge learning opportunity for me. And we'll talk about that later. But, you know, I had this belief that if I walked away from the money and I chose to do good for the world, I read earlier about your personal mission statements, which I loved, and I wanted to share mine, which is still pretty much the same consistent one that I've had. My purpose is to support people in empowering themselves, and that's kind of what's kept me intrigued with different areas. I've gone into different companies and different areas of my life, and that's kind of the thread that pulls all these things through is mm-hmm. what can I be doing to support more people in showing up for themselves and being their best selves. And so that learning is constant, and it is a daily experience for me to check my ego and thank it for sharing and go on to, well, what is it that I really want to be experiencing in this moment? And that doesn't always happen. I mean, there are plenty of times when I am in it.
So you brought that experience, that process that you went through during that time to the game, and you created that to help others.
Right. So when I created the game, I was probably like maybe 25, 26 when I had the thought that I wanted to create something. I didn't necessarily know it was going to be a game. Mm-hmm. The reason it showed up as a game, I think, is because a game is experiential. There's an mm-hmm. element where there's a willingness to kind of step out of yourself and be
right.
more honest.
Right.
So within a few questions, you can really quickly see where is this person coming from, and you can call each other on your, I can't say the F word, but you can call each other on your shift, right?
Right.
You know when people are, how they're showing up, and it's very interesting because it's a game. People are much more willing to own their stuff and to really recognize what it is they're doing. And when the way the game is structured, there's the object of the game is to move from fear to love and drop our defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out a way, how can I take all these universal principles and put it into something that's going to be interesting for the masses, that's going to be interesting for people who are living, who aren't in San Francisco or, supposed spiritual centers, who are young like me, who just haven't been exposed to these things which could be considered really new agey.
Right.
How can we put it into something fun and engaging and get people to have an experience where within an hour they're able to identify, oh my gosh, I see why I'm doing, I see why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be because they heard somebody else in their share, they might have picked up a card and that person says, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I've been doing. Because for the most part, it doesn't matter what the situation is, what's running us can pretty much be the same thing. So if we can shift it from a place of fear to a place of love, that's where the opportunity lies. And so there's four main parts of the game. You move from fear to love, and drop your defenses, and as you play the game, there's a set of dice. The first
mm-hmm.
one says trust or doubt. Trust moves us forward, and doubt keeps us stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And when you land on a spot, there's four cards that you can pick up. The shift cards are introspective, or they ask us to do something. The step into their shoes cards ask you to actually step into somebody else's shoes and see what is it like from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing I haven't told you is that we had a stand-up comedian help us write this as well. So you've got principles that are coming from, Buddha, Gandhi,
yeah.
Lao Tzu. You've got Marianne Williamson, Eckhart Tolle. Like, we've had a lot of contemporary self-help leaders lend content as well. But then we had a stand-up comedian so that it'd be fun. So
yeah.
Some of these cards are really just out there. They're over the top.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then the third deck is the one where the psychologists were most interested in it. We had probably about 100 psychologists using this at one point. Those cards, the choose cards, have two opposing statements, and you're supposed to choose the card or the statement that comes from a place of love. And
mm-hmm.
then the important part is you're supposed to apply it to your life
mm-hmm.
during the last week. So a very simple example would be, I'll ask you, you can answer this. All right, which statement comes from a place of love? The first statement is, I see only the past. The second statement is, I see only the present. Or which one would support you more if you came from that perspective?
I think depending on the situation, for me personally, because there are wonderful, lovely things in the past that you can draw from, wonderful memories. At the same time, the present moment allows you to create the future. So regardless of what the past is, the present moment allows you the opportunity to make that conscious choice of making a loving decision.
Mm-hmm. And so the way the answer in the game is actually I feel in the present. And the reason behind it, so there are
you have more control, that is. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And you're right.
And
yeah.
And the game is also set up so that it elicits conversation. So things that you might not bring up after 50 years of being brother and sister, you play the game, stuff starts to come up. It also, because it's kind of open-ended, it elicits this conversation so that somebody might say, well, wait a second, you know, I really think that, you know, isolating the past, this is why that might come from a place of love for me. So there are right and wrong answers in the deck, but there is a conversation that wants to ensue. And so some things are very, very different than what we've been conditioned to think growing up. So, for example, what I give goes away, or the idea that all that I have is everything. So I'm totally. It is such a much more eloquent saying than what I'm saying right now, and I'm not getting it correctly. But the idea is that, in essence, we have everything. That there is no such thing as giving something away and it being gone.
Everything what I have is my possession. It's me, mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It all comes back. So the pieces in the game that just bring up new understandings. And so the final part, the final question. When you land on a drop a defense spot, you pick up a drop a defense card, and those ask you to acknowledge when you've been that defense and when you've been just the opposite. And the defenses might be the busy bee, the controller, the listening impaired. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that our defenses are not what we are. Our defenses are just our behavior. So if we can acknowledge when we've been that defense and when we've been just the opposite, then we can let them go. And that's how the game works. Once you drop all three of your defenses, then you win.
That's fantastic. Thank you for walking us through that. And what I gather is that what's interesting about this game, you guys have created something that allows people to be very relaxed because it's taken out of you and you're playing a game, so it's externalized. Because a lot of times when you talk about this issue, so to speak, and you mentioned something about psychologists have been using this and so forth, and they like specific aspects of the game, and it's simply because it draws out that thing that you don't want to talk about most of the time. And the game kind of forces you because here you draw the card, so now you don't have much of a choice. You have to answer.
I mean, you don't have to answer. You could sit there and be quiet, but everybody else is going to call you on that.
Precisely. It's a process of, in some ways, disassociation.
It's interesting because that's like a paradox. It is in some ways because you get the steps. Mm-hmm. There's a distance
away from
between
it.
You.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet, it really is more of a peeling of the layers because even though you might be disassociating, you are associating more with the behaviors that you weren't seeing before.
Right.
So, interesting. Like we did not workshops. We were doing shipped circles all along the Front Range here in Colorado. We were doing them at Borders Books and stuff. And I remember in one of the sessions, we had a man who picked up. For his drop a defense card, it was the conditional giver. And he was like, that's not the case. Like, I just can't think of anything. And we tell people, you know, go back for the drop a defense cards. Go all the way back in your history. The choose cards, we want them to be current to what's going on in your life so that it's experiential, it's based on, like, what's happening, what's real for you right now. The defense cards can go way back. And it was really hard for him to come up with when he was a conditional giver, because he was such a generous man on so many levels, and you know, he had all these great examples of when he was the opposite. And it took him thinking about, you know, sometimes it's people needing to go back to how are they with, you know, when they were young, or maybe in certain relationships with people. This man, it turned out it was an inanimate object. He was a programmer, and when he thought about his code, he realized that when he wrote something, when he wrote a piece of code and he gave it to his coworkers, he had this belief that they should just know what he wrote cold. And if they had any questions, like, too bad for them, they weren't smart enough. Or so it was really interesting. Like, when we asked him to go further, he really got that, wow, you know, I'm he's really protective when it comes to, you know, what he programs. If you don't know that language and it's not written the way you wanted it, too bad.
Well, in some ways, he's very analytical. He presumes a lot. And then on the flip side, You have a dual personality here, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's natural because both are acts of our subconscious mind.
Yeah.
What your game teaches is that it teaches us to be mindful of everything that we do, and mm-hmm. there's always room for improvements in things that we do.
Yeah, and that there's, you know, the game is called Shift, and yet it's not necessarily saying as a mandate, you need to shift. Because
right.
in that sense, then we'd be looking at all that's wrong with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is taking note, though. It's how can, when I talk about shift and what it really does, my general feeling is that it allows us to have an awareness of what we're doing. If mm-hmm. there's an element that we think we could be doing better, that we could be more conscious or more generous or more loving or whatever it is, then by all means, make that shift and move mm-hmm. towards doing that. But having the visibility, having that insight is the first piece into, being able to make a change, just mm-hmm. being able to see what's going on.
Well, let's go back to guiding principles for shift. What's interesting about it, you have married the Eastern philosophy about spirituality, of living life, because Buddhism is about a way of life. It's not necessarily religion. It's mm-hmm. living your life. And then, of course, you're talking about growing up in a Jewish family, a Catholic family. That's religion. And
right.
this game touches the very core of all religions or way of life, so to speak, and what I call personally myself the Ten Commandments, so to speak, that is visible in any philosophical way of living. Let's talk about that. You got Deepak Chopra selling your stuff and so forth. So obviously there must be some core values attached to all of this. So please share with us some of these principles you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the principles, this is nothing new. I mean, we're doing is, basically aggregating thoughts that have been around for 5,000 years. And these universal principles are, in many ways, in my experience, and I can only speak for what I mm-hmm. choose to believe in my experience, it talks about we're all connected, we're all one, that thoughts have, there's an energy that, when we act a certain way, we actually mm-hmm. affect those around us. And mm-hmm. There is a power in our thoughts. And there's a number of major principles that you probably find in any universal scripture or, mm-hmm. I don't want to say that because then it sounds like it is religion, and that's not the case at all. What was the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts? It's like, make new friends and keep the old one as silver as the other as gold. It's all about, how are we all connected and how can
right.
we support each other in shining at our fullest? And how can we be, how can we stand in our greatness and recognize that, we are all brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We're in it together. And that those things affect, those same principles correlate to how are we affecting our environment. What are we eating? What are we consuming? Like these same kinds of thoughts really are the core principles for are we living a sustainable life that supports.
We're living basically in a closed system. People don't realize it. Of course, the world is so huge. So there were a period of time that people that mm-hmm. live in America does not know anything going on in the East. And then, of course, in the East does not know what's going on in the West. But now we're living in a global village, and that's proven by Facebook and so forth. But having said that, mm-hmm. you're right, because you cannot create order without creating disorder somewhere else. We are living in a closed system, so as such, we have to be very mindful. So that draws us back within our own self. You cannot create order without creating disorder somewhere else. You cannot be excessive on one side mm-hmm. of the equation, hoping that, no big deal, you will not suffer consequence. And having mm-hmm. said that, I do want to bring that to you personally, because I know you mentioned something very interesting and it's very true, because shifts happen within ourselves little at a time, and it's a series of small shifts that actually are more profound than one mm-hmm. big epiphany that flipped you over, so to speak, because it could flip mm-hmm. you over, but then what are you doing afterwards that makes a difference? So having mm-hmm. said that, please explain to us some of the shifts that you have gone through last 12 months.
Yeah. I mean, and to pick up on, it being a series of events or a series of actions. I often would joke that sometimes my ability to live consistently from a place of love was like bending spoons. It took that much energy and forcefulness to, you know, be present and be committed to living from love. It did at times feel like I was bending spoons. I've had so many opportunities to shift, and it's interesting because I've even had, in my creation of this game, there's been so much learning that has come from it. I think that the young me thought, I could go and I can make this choice to walk away from the money and the glamour and all this, you know, excitement, and I could choose to create something of purpose. And because of that, God was going to show up for me. There was some kind of, you know, karmic component to my choosing to do good rather than, you know, just, you know, produce or succeed financially, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And there was a real struggle for me because I like to speak to this part because I think that there are a lot of self-help leaders out there that have fantastic, amazing things to say and for us to learn from. And they are in a place of, it seems, continued grace. They're living it. They're right there. And it's very likely that most of them, they're you can feel their energy. They're fantastic, and they're emitting this consistent energy of love. And I like to talk about what it was like to be an entrepreneur and how and to create a company and to have people working for you and to fund the development of a physical product that had to make it to market that didn't have budget behind it. That there's a lot of things that that make me like everybody else, a real person that has dealt with an amazing amount of struggles. And it's very possible that much of that came because I was not at a place where I was embodying shift fully. I had this, you know, this vision, this is what was going to happen, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I'm going to put all my time and energy and money into it, and it's going to happen. And I forced a lot of it. And I don't think I was willing to admit that for a long time. I just believed, you know, we're doing something of purpose, this is good, the market's going to respond, it's going to be fantastic. And the truth was, I went through all of my reserves in a very major way. I almost filed bankruptcy. I got myself to a point where I was very, very sick. And I was working here. I had been working 80-hour weeks when I was in the dot-com days, and I was making all this money. It was great. Went to go live a life of more purpose and found I recreated the exact same thing.
Right.
And, of course, because where's the consistent piece? It's me. If I'm not going to show up different, I'm going to have the exact same experience. So, you know, I was still trying to work as hard as I could, and I had this belief that, you know, almost like this if-then statement, if I can do this, if I can, you know, work this much harder, if we can, then we'll have this other element. And that other element really was peace. You know, I kept thinking that if we can just get through this next hurdle, or we can make this next thing happen, then we'll have peace. Then I'll get to have, you know, the fun Sunday with my husband, or, you know, and it's like putting all those things out there. Life is happening now. And so, I had some interesting experiences with shift where at some point I had to go back and take a position with a company. And I was fortunate. I went to a company that was in the learning and development space, and I got to learn about what companies were doing to get their people to apply what they learned in trainings back in the workplace. So shift had this piece where it gives us an awareness of why we do what we do. This company I was working for had a web-based technology that gave you the ability to make the learning stick. So how do you actually make the behavior change stick? And that's always been an interest of mine. You know, when I talk about supporting people and empowering themselves, I was always interested in incenting behavior. Back in my advertising days, it was all around, you know, how can we move somebody to action? And we did that with different, you know, points for their purchases and all sorts of stuff. Then I got into shift and I looked at from the individual, if our thoughts create our reality, how does that affect the organization? How does that affect the world around us? And how does everything start from the level of thought? And then I got into how can we make that behavior change stick? And then I got really, really sick. So I burnt myself out in a big, big way. We got funding to create the online version of Shift. At the same time, I was handling two positions for this other company. I was VP marketing, and I was also director of business development, having to hit a quota and, you know, redo all their branding, the website, all sorts of stuff. And at the same time, we built out the online version of Shift, which I'm excited to talk about. We can talk about that towards the end. And then I crashed. I crashed and burned. We didn't know what was wrong for like 2 years. I went from doctor to doctor to doctor, and I think that I know that I created my sickness. And in the course, it talks about sickness being a defense against the truth. And the reality is I wasn't happy with what I was doing. I was... I know I created it so that I could forcefully step back and press the pause button and really see what I valued. And I was running so fast for so long that I had to get very, very sick so that I could be still. And I actually had mercury poisoning is what we finally figured out. Once I had 10 fillings removed incorrectly, and then had 5 times what the CDC allows in my bloodstream, and it turns out I was also mercury allergic, I became what they call a universal reactor. I was allergic to every single thing, you name it. Like, things I ate a week before, I couldn't eat the next week.
Wow.
So, I mean, I was down to, at the end, I was down to, like, brown rice. I couldn't, I was, no gluten, dairy, meat. No nightshades, no...
Yeah.
I mean, it was endless, and I had chemical sensitivities. I couldn't put gas in the car. I couldn't walk my dogs across the street. I couldn't go to a restaurant. I couldn't handle the... I had like a... It was almost like having a flu for months and months and months until I found fantastic doctors, went through a process of getting my liver pathways opened again. I detoxed. I went through chelation, had the step removed. And now... I'm a totally different person. I'm so thankful. I feel so blessed. And that opportunity, it really gave me time to look at what was, where the inconsistencies were. And what I saw for a very long time, because I was studying for like the last 2 years, I was reading and researching about nutritional psychotherapy and learning about how foods affect cognition, how there's a major link between the body and the mind. And I was completely unwilling to live in my body up until this happened. I would run my body to the ground. You know, I did drugs for I don't know how many years. I was doing everything I could to destroy really this, you know, this is supposed to be the altar of my soul. You know, I'm supposed to... And I wasn't getting that. I was completely unwilling to sit and feel anything in my body. As soon as there was a feeling of me being uncomfortable or any kind of fear-based thought, I would override it. I'd work harder. I'd eat. I would, like, there was always something that I would do to not have to feel what was going on in my body. So that's kind of like the full circle of where I've come to now, because I'm actually now working with an organics company. And because of this whole experience, I have realized there is a major connection between the mind and body, and that where a shift, my whole thought forever was one small shift in thought can shift your life. And I still believe that to be the case. I now believe that there is a component that happens prior. There is an element where to have the ability to respond, we have to make sure that chemically we're able to. And the food that we're eating and what we ingest actually can alter our ability to have that space to respond rather than react. At least that was my experience. I was trying my hardest to, you know, put all of these principles in place and all of the therapy of the 20 years and all these, you know, how can I think my way through this, think my way through it? And, you know, a component of it, I was having allergic reactions and I was, you know, I've learned about even alcoholics and how, like, there's a level of they're not getting enough vitamin C. It's almost at the level of scurvy. And so, you know, mm-hmm. when an alcoholic, when somebody needs to have this sugar rush, I mean, and I was experiencing that, low blood sugar, the quickest hit for me was I'm going to drink, and that would mm-hmm. make me stable. But I wasn't realizing, you know, the drop in my glycemic, you know, everything dropping yeah. after. So this is all the stuff that I've been learning about, and I'm really excited to broaden the message. Mm-hmm. There's more than the power of thought. There's acknowledging our body as well and recognizing that what we put into it will create, it's going to create the experience that we have. And I was completely unwilling to see that before, and that's now where I'm at.
That's fantastic. Why do people play shift?
And why do they play shift? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Well, there's different types of groups that play shift. You know, there's the group of girlfriends that if given a Friday night and a bottle of wine, the game that normally takes about 45 minutes to an hour to get through, it could take like uh-huh. 3 hours. and it's great because they know each other's history. So they might also yeah. you know, support, oh, I remember when you were dating this one. Or so for them, it's a great way to share an evening. There's ways of using the game to facilitate a deeper discussion. So mm-hmm. the game has been used with either marital coaches or executive coaches. We've done it in corporate settings as well. Mm-hmm. We've done workshops. We had probably like 200 teachers down in Denver. And the idea was to create some consistency in our thought and action because, you know, they were able to step into each other's shoes. They were able to see how, you know, where they were at present and where they wanted to shift. And the game, it really does create a level of intimacy that probably doesn't happen otherwise. In fact, mm-hmm. we had two brothers, and this is actually the original founder of Wilson Learning, who was on our board. He played with his brother. They were in their 70s. And he said that he learned things that he never knew. I mean, they've been on this planet together for how many years, and the game just brought up a level of conversation that would not have happened otherwise. Mm-hmm. So in terms of why do people play, there's the ability to step into each other's shoes. There's the ability to get closer and connect. It can be a fantastic icebreaker. And I think that the big key piece is mm-hmm. that there be some willingness.
You mentioned something very interesting. The way I look at it is that the reason why people play it is because it allows them to be not imposing on the other person. It creates mm-hmm. that open conversation. It all of a sudden right now it opens up a passageway for a wonderful dialogue.
Right, rather than you did this or you
yeah.
did that. Or...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because when we first created the game at the beginning, people wanted me to, or they wanted the game to be set up. So right at the beginning, you're actually given defenses by the other players that knew you. And we mm-hmm. decided that was too, too mean. Can you imagine if I was like, well, Johnny, we're going to play the game now. And to start off, I think that you probably, I'm going to give you the controller. And I'm going to give you the
Right.
No. The funny Very thing true. Is, even though yeah. we don't have it set up that way that people are giving you the defenses mm-hmm. that they think match up to you most.
Precisely.
The interesting thing is, there's something that happens when people are playing the game that the cards that they choose are the cards that they're meant to get. So mm-hmm. it happens anyway.
Yeah. And then, well, of course, if someone gives you the card, that's their perception of you, and you have the opportunity to debunk that.
It's not set up that way anymore. So
yeah.
That's a different game. Yeah.
But it allows you, though. I mean, it gives you an opportunity to open up. I used to, when I was running my corporation, for a company that I worked for, I was chief operating officer. And I always tell people that don't just do everything I say, in the sense that I always tell them, look, if you're not understanding of certain things, if you're mad at certain things that I ask you to do, please, by all means, come talk to me, because mm-hmm. I don't want to be a constant thorn on your side and you have no idea, you know, you have a perception of it. I'd rather you be, for lack of a better term, be pissed off at me for the right,
right.
reason rather than for the wrong reason. And I'll be the first one to tell you, yeah, I did it that way to piss you off.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing of in playing the game, is there is a level of honesty that just shows up. And I think, you know, people listening might say, wow, you know, talking about you have to be truthful and to have this willingness, and that might sound like really scary, but I mean we've had games in groups of people, you know, 30, 50 people that have no knowledge of each other. They're new to the experience, and literally within 10 minutes they're into it and they're having fun, and there's no it's fun. There's no fear. So it just takes sitting down and playing, and now you'll be able to play with anyone anywhere in the world. Should we talk about that part? Or
yes, go ahead, please. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now Shift is set up to be played online, and you can play with anybody anywhere in the world for free. It has multi-person video chat, so you're able to stream video and play virtually. The game is set up as a flash game on one side of the screen, and on the other side of the screen you've got four windows. And if you don't have a little video, a little webcam, you can also play with either audio, or there's a text box so that you can write in as well, so that you can play with other people. So that's what we've created, and the idea is that, one, anybody would be able to play anywhere. And that was really my interest when I wanted to have as many people as possible experience the ability to, you know, empower themselves. And I think that the game does that. So when the technology was available to do that, it was so exciting, because 10 years ago or so when we created the game, it just wasn't possible for us to do anything other than a physical board game. Mm-hmm. And now the technology is there that you can do it. And you can, the idea is that we want that piece to be free. The next piece that will be coming is the ability to actually have one of those windows be a facilitator. So you could have a marriage counselor, you can have executive coach, you can have somebody that facilitates you in going deeper as you play the game. And it is a very different experience when you play the game with friends versus having somebody who has been taught how to call the answers and how to, you know, get you to go a little bit deeper and, you know, stick with it until you really get to a key piece of learning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it is right now, and it's actually been, not to be too technical, but the game has been set up so that it's called object-oriented. Anything in the physical, in the actual game part of it, can be switched out to include any author's content, their look and feel, you name it. So eventually the idea is that we would put this behind, you name it, like Hay House, we'd work behind. You might play the game and it might be, you know, there's the original version of Shift, but you might at some point play a different version of Shift that might be based on Wayne Dyer's last movie, The Shift, you know, or it might be, it could be Eckhart Tolle. It could be anyone's content. And what the game does is it allows you to take that lesson and then apply it to your life. So where a book, you know, you're learning and you're reading it and you're hoping you're going to make that transition to using the lesson, the game actually gives you the ability to act upon it and to pull the lesson into what's happening in your life.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Can you share with us some of the success stories from individuals who have played the game?
Yeah, let's see. Of course, like the first one I'm
besides
thinking
besides you, that is.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about people who have used the game in different ways. I mean, I know there's some people that have, as simple as the trust doubt die, they have used that and just ask a question, or they'll keep it near them to constantly remember, you know, like trust is the way to go. Other people might use the cards and might just pull them. Some people actually bring the cards with them, and it's almost like an icebreaker that they have. And when they meet people, they'll, you know, ask them to pick a card, and they'll kind of just, you know, pop right into that piece. I was laughing at the beginning because I thought about, not necessarily a success story, I thought about when we first started the game years and years ago, there was a couple that was playing, and what was it? It wasn't the pleaser. It was, oh, gosh, I'm forgetting the name of this defense. It was when it described, it was like about being static cling. The clinger.
Okay.
And so it's interesting because, you know, this couple played, and then, you know, it was all great in the game, and later that night, you know, she's like, well, so, you know, honey, like, do you really think, you know, like, I'm the clinger? And so it brought up more stuff later where she was able to, you know, really ask about, you know, well, when I do these things and that, how does that work? And but we have had, we've used the game in different scenarios. So there is even a school, and it's actually more of a detention center for trouble, mm-hmm. for kids that have been, they've been in trouble with the law, and they've dealt with, you know, for some reason, whatever choice they made got them into a situation where they're now at this facility. And they have used the game there, and the kids have been able to really take ownership and be responsible. Like they've, mm-hmm. in playing the game, said, oh, my gosh, you know, I recognize that, wow, this is what I was doing. And these are kids that have been, you know, that are tough kids, really tough mm-hmm. kids. And I think about, like, if I had been given the opportunity to get these lessons when I was younger, I guarantee, like, most of the things that I did in my life I probably wouldn't have done. Granted, I probably wouldn't have created this game either, but there's a whole, you know, range of how this has supported people, whether it's, you know, been in their marriage or with companies, and you know, how we were able to support them in seeing, wow, you know, this is where we are today, and we are doing mm-hmm. some things really well, and this is where we could be shifting, and there's a conversation that hasn't happened yet between these mm-hmm. two groups, and now that we've started the dialogue, things are happening. So, yeah, and I think that the place that I'm really excited about going at some point is giving people a way to apply what they've learned over time. So mm-hmm. there's another piece that will come at some other later date that gives people a way, once they've decided what it is that they want to shift, that they'll be able to set a goal around it, and then over the course of maybe 3 months, 6 months,
right.
Use this other web-based system that the company I've been working for previously to apply the learning and make it stick over time.
Very interesting. How has Shift the Game impacted you personally since you created this and went through period of 10 years, and how has that affected you?
Oh, do you want to do another hour? I'm just kidding. On so many levels. It's been a very, very interesting ride. And there have been, quite honestly, I've experienced Shift as if it were a child, and put an incredible amount of ownership or me into what this was, not recognizing that there's a separation that needed to occur. I went through a period of grieving around Shift where mm-hmm. I wanted it to be this bigger, amazing thing. I wanted it to happen so quickly. I wanted to not be in debt.
mm-hmm.
There was a period where I couldn't even talk about Shift. Like, there was maybe anger around it, or just, you know, incredible frustration because I chose to believe that I was the only person that could make this happen. And where I'm at today is I really would love to connect with other organizations or groups or people that want to move it forward. And we're in talks with some different technology partners about giving them the ability to use Shift and mm-hmm. support their organizations. And that's partly why I wanted to speak with you today, is because my interest is in making this available to as many people as possible. And it's never really been about, like, you know, how can we make money? It's how can we put this in the hands of the greatest amount of people so that they can have this experience, even if it's just once, of seeing what's driving them, seeing what's keeping them from their full potential. And when we got to the place where we were able to create the online version and have that be free, that was just incredibly exciting because that's, you know, it's leading us there. So that's, you know, if anybody's listening and they recognize that they or they have an interest in being part of, you know, moving it forward, or, you know, I'm even in a place of letting it go and knowing that there's a purpose and vision that could be much greater than the one I had, and that I might have been the conduit to get it into the form that it is today, and that might not be the end form that it's supposed to take. So it's been a real interesting experience for me to recognize that shift is, it's of this world. It's not, it's not me. It's not an extension of me. It was an idea that came through me with a purpose to support people in recognizing their truth, that they're whole, complete, that they're loved. And if I can, you know, get this in the hands of as many people as possible and support them in having that experience, then that's what I'd like to see happen. And that might not be something that is what I, Nicole Casanova, am supposed to be doing. You know, maybe it's Oprah. maybe it's someone else.
What it is that I see sometimes, and it's very true, though, because when we develop certain things, or certain things that we're spiritually guided to do, it's human nature. I'm not saying that we're selfish about it, but it's a conscious choice that we make. You know, or maybe we are supposed to take it till the end. But the old adage comes back around, especially in my situation, when I talk about love and fear, like you do. And in a nutshell, for me, I tell people, when you allow your love to exceed your fear, you will experience harmony in everything you do. But having said that, what you mentioned about coming up and creating the game of shift, it just takes one woman to give birth to a child, but it takes a village to raise the child.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I this has been part of my learning, because I had this belief, or what I was taught, was that no one will ever be there for you. This is part of my learning as a child, and I held on to that belief, like, with, in tooth and nail, that no one's ever going to make this happen. No one's going to make anything happen for you. You've got to make it all happen. And so my willingness to commit to easy world and to recognize that that conspiracy means to breathe together, that we are all connected, that there is a village to support me, it's that's all been part of my learning.
Very much so. And that's very, very true. Well, where can someone go to get more information about Shift and keep up with your latest happenings?
Yeah, if they go to shiftthegame.com, shiftthegame.com, there is a blog there. There's actually, the more exciting thing is, go and play the online version. So when you go onto the website, you'll see on the left nav bar, it says login registration. There's also a little video that shows how it plays. There's also a demo. So when you go in there, you'll be able to watch. I explained how the game plays, but you'll be able to see a visual cartoon demo that shows how the game is played. And then invite your friends. I mean, it's set up right now so that you can invite anyone. You can invite them, you know, a week from now, whenever it is. It'll send you a reminder saying, by the way, you've got the Shift game starting. And you can invite up to, you know, three other people. You be the person that's setting up the game, and there'll be four of you. Go play it. That would make me so excited for people to actually play it.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yes, let's see. Okay, so the recipe for living that I have had for many, many years based on shift was that one small shift in thought can shift your life. I absolutely believe this is true, and that in each moment I can shift and come from a place of love. And now I'm adding on to that I believe that there is, we have an opportunity to really be our best selves when we are consistent with what we're putting into our bodies, how we treat our bodies. Are we getting enough rest? Are we exercising? Are we eating well? Are we filling our reserves? Are we laughing? Are we in with our community? You know, what is it that we're doing? Or are we working and striving? And so I think that there is this element where, yes, one small shift in thought can shift our lives. And let's also acknowledge that there is something beyond thought. There's feeling, and feeling occurs in the body. And we can do things to make our bodies feel great. So if we do that and we live from a place of love, then hopefully we'll have the peace we're looking for.
That's wonderful. It's a great recipe. Nicole, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
You're welcome.
To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be the author of Meet Einstein, Marella Kleiner. Meet Einstein is a children's book that helps to introduce children to science and show them that they are already great scientists. This book helps in making the connection for preschoolers to everything they see and do by teaching them that science is all around us. Marella and I will be discussing about her life's journey, her new book, and celebrate Albert Einstein's birthday, which is on March 14. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. And Nicole, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you. It's fantastic being here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.